Good morning, Maybridge. Morning. Hope everybody's good today. My name's Ian, I'm a partner here, and I'm going to be speaking for 15, 20 minutes today from a passage of Scripture. Bit of a tall order I've got after all of the excitement we've had this morning of, you know, harvest samba and banana costumes and sweets. I don't have any sweets to throw out. So I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to try to do the impossible and keep both adults and children engaged. So if you are a child, please try and listen, try and follow along. I'm going to have some questions at some point. So I'm continuing the series today on the Radical King. This is looking at Jesus's teaching throughout the book of Matthew, and I am going to be talking from Matthew 19, 13 to 15. This is the verse that we've just done. So I'm going to put it up on screen and we'll read it together. In fact, let's actually read it together, okay? So you can all see it there, so let's everybody read it out loud. Then people brought little children to Jesus for him, to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Okay, so Jesus, in this passage, was speaking to a really diverse group of people. Like most human cultures, the people he was speaking to were people that were very hierarchical. They'd see some people as better than them, other people as worse than them, and they'd look down on them. And he also had people from different parts of Israel. So if you see the map up there, you see Galilee and Samaria at the top. This is where he has been. So most of the time that we've been following this through, he's been in Samaria. And now in this chapter, he moves on to Judea. And that's a very different place. But it says at the beginning of this chapter, the beginning of chapter 19, that people followed him there. So he's gathering this crowd. And this crowd of people, he started in Samaria, and now he's moving on to Judea, and they're following him there. So there's all kinds of people with him. There's men, there's women, there's adults, there's children that have been slaves and their masters. There's rich and the poor. And the people from Judea and the people from Samaria were quite different. Judea was a place where Jerusalem was. It was a very religious place. It was all Jews that lived there. Whereas Samaria, you have Galilee, you have the Sea of Galilee, you have much more fertile land, you have it's farmed there, the Sea of Galilee is fished, you have traders and merchants that come from different lands. It's quite a prosperous region. And it's also very mixed. You have some Jews there. You have different people of different religions. And these people, the Samaritans from Samaria and the Jews from Judea, they would look down and judge one another. To the people from Judea, the Samarians, the Samaritans, they were not very religious. They failed at a lot of the God tests. But they were also a bit jealous of them because they were quite prosperous. They did quite well. They had good land. They had good sea. And the people in that region, they looked at the people in Judea and they'd look down on them. They'd think, you know, they're not as wealthy as us. They're just always telling us what to do and looking down on us and saying we don't stack up. We're not following all the rules. And some of these people from Samaria were known as Pharisees. And the Pharisees were particularly religious people, and they devised this system of 600 rules. Can you imagine that? 600 rules that they had to meticulously follow every single one in order to be righteous before God. And they were very good at following those rules, and they were also very good at looking down on other people that did not follow those rules, that didn't stack up to that framework that they had put together. And at one point, Jesus mocked them. He said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin, but you've neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness." So tithing is where you give 10% of what you have to God. And they were tithing out of their spice rack. They were tithing. You imagine, you know, their mint, you know, one teaspoon for God, 9 teaspoons for me. They loved things that they could measure, but they were neglecting the things that really mattered to God, the things that were harder to measure: righteousness, mercy, and justice. And so in this passage, hold on a minute. Turn two pages at once. So somehow Jesus kind of attracted all of these people. As he traveled and as he spoke, all of these different people would come to him. And this was like something they'd never seen before. Normally you'd have people just of one kind together. And they all came for different reasons. Some of them it was just interesting. There's a crowd. What's going on? There's loads of people there. It's just a spectacle. Some came seeking healing. Some parents wanted their children to be blessed. Some, like the Pharisees, they wanted an argument with Jesus. We heard about that last week when Matt was speaking. And some of them were genuinely amazed at what was going on. And some of them were being transformed by his teaching. But for whatever reason they came, Jesus was a really magnetic figure that drew people towards him. And when these parents, as we were reading about in the passage, as they came forward to bring their children to Jesus, the disciples rebuked them. They didn't want Jesus to be troubled by the children. The children had no use to Jesus, or so they thought. But in reality, they were helping Jesus to create one of his most famous teachable moments. And in the presence of all of these people, with all their differing senses of importance and entitlement, he says, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." The kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these, the little children. Not the religious zealots, not the Pharisees, not the wealthy traders, not the masters who owned other human beings as property, not even to the disciples who were serving and supporting his ministry. He wasn't saying to these people, he was saying to these little children that were sat with him. And this isn't the first time he said something like this. There's a very similar scene to this one that happened in the previous chapter while Jesus was still in Samaria. Matthew 18, verse 1, it says, I think I've got it on screen. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, and whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." You'll never even enter the kingdom of heaven unless you change and become like little children. You don't enter the kingdom of heaven due to your own effort or your status. You can't buy your way in. And in fact, the very next part of this chapter has that famous line about it being easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. So children, especially little children, they know nothing of status. They just know that they belong. Children know nothing except what they have received as a gift from the father and mother. Children don't fear not having the next meal, or they don't fear not receiving what they need. Now, I recognize that is not true, sadly, for every single child, but that's when we talk about somebody having a lost childhood, where they have missed out on that opportunity to that period in life where you don't have those worries, you simply belong. And as we grow up, we start to build up a sense of who we are and our identity based on lots of different factors. And I just want to play a short video. This is from the Golden Globes Awards, and this is Jim Carrey being introduced.
From the upcoming film True Crimes, please welcome two-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey.
Thank you. I am two-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey. You know, when I go to sleep at night, I'm not just a guy going to sleep. I'm two-time Golden Globe winner Jim Carrey going to get some well-needed shut-eye. And when I dream, I don't just dream any old dream. No, sir. I dream about being three-time Golden Globe winning actor Jim Carrey. Because then I would be enough.
Thank you. Then I would be enough. Now, the funniest thing about this video is he's saying this to a room full of people hoping and dreaming that they will get this Golden Globe award. And this is something that we all relate to. When will I be enough? What does it take for me to be enough? And kids, this is where I need a little bit of help from you. Who's played this game? Maybe not that specific one, but who's played Top Trumps? Hands up if you played Top Trumps. Adults or children? Yeah, everybody knows what this is. Okay, here's one for Cristiano Ronaldo. I think he's been a bit naughty this week. So we've got his height, caps, goals, trophies, and Top Trumps ratings. And you know how it works. You compare them and you see which one's the best and swap cards. And I can't remember how it works, but, you know, that kind of thing. So we're going to do a Top Trump for a human being. So anybody can take part in this. I'd like to, first of all, we need to name this person. I want a name that there's probably nobody in this room called that. So somebody give me a name, a random, unusual name. Well, Hugo. I think we have a Hugo here sometimes. Bartholomew. Do we have a Bartholomew here? You've got to spell Bartholomew now. This is fun. Okay, so we're going to do Bart. We're going to do Bart's Top Trumps. Now, I've missed an opportunity here to draw Bart. Need some spiky hair. Okay, so what I want you to think and shout out is, how do we judge somebody's worth? It might be good things or bad things or whatever. So how do we... what would be the top trumps for a human being? Any hairstyle? Well, we'll say looks. Yeah, looks. Okay. Anybody else? Talents. Sense of humour. This is sounding like a dating thing now, isn't it? Yes. Influence. That's a good one. Wealth. Yep. Sorry. Royalty or power, maybe we could say. So we had wealth, and we've got education, we've got power. One more, character. That's a good one. In fact, let's add some more virtues. So we could say humility. And just anywhere. That's fine. Great. So do you kind of agree? These are some factors. We might have, each of us, we might put different numbers along there. We might think in some of these I'm high. Maybe I'm an 8 or a 10. Some of these, I'm a 1 or a 2. Do we relate to that? Yeah? Am I enough? Are you enough? That's a question that I don't think any of us here are above asking. We've all asked it in one form or another repeatedly. Kids, you might think about the person that's better than you at football or better than you at maths, or you might think, oh, I have more friends than that person. So it goes in both directions. It's ways that we think we're inferior, and it's ways we think we're superior, and we look down on other people. And I want to just put up on screen, this is not meant to be a good example. This is an example from a random self-help site, and it says, the truth is, it doesn't matter who you are, who's in your social circle, or what you've achieved, you are good enough and equal to everyone. Now, that sounds nice, doesn't it? It might make you feel good for an hour or so, until you remember all of the ways that you are not good enough, all of the ways that you don't stack up, and all of the ways you're not equal to others. I mean, I know that I'm not wealthy as Bill Gates. I know that I'm not as powerful and influential as Liz Truss. Okay, bad example. But little aside there, we've seen a great case study this week of somebody that has got everything that they've ever dreamt of, power and fame and everything else, and doesn't necessarily make you happy. So encouragement is not encouragement if it's based on a lie. I know who I really am. I know the reality of being me. I know that I'm not pure in thought. I know that I'm not merciful to everybody that I encounter. I know how I hurt the people that I love. I know how I compare myself favorably compared to some people and unfavorably compared to others. I know my insecurities. I know the things I'm bad at, where I might put myself as one or two there, but I wish I was an eight or nine. I know the things I do when nobody's watching. I know that I'm not enough, but that's okay. How can that be okay? It goes against this kind of thing here, but that's okay, because when we realize that, we can go to God and say, God, I can't do it. And he says that's okay, because it's not based on this ridiculous list of things here. It's based on Jesus. And Jesus is enough. Jesus is always enough. And he invites us to take this list of things here, all of these things here where we don't measure up, all of these empty things like this, he invites us to take these and nail these to the cross and say, I have been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. We don't need to fake it until we make it, pretending that we are not what we're not. It's no longer based on me, it's based on him. This is the most freeing thing. And some empty platitude like we see up on the screen up there, it doesn't come close. But do we learn this once and forever? Is this something that we become a Christian and suddenly we're content and we know we have value and we rest in that glorious truth that God loves us and we never have an insecurity ever again? I wish that was true. But this is something that we're on a lifetime of learning. Learning that he is in us and we are in him. His value and worth becomes our value and worth. His righteousness becomes our righteousness. His ways become our ways. His inheritance becomes ours. Maybe we need reminding of that today. Maybe we need a realignment of our thinking to remind ourselves, where is it that we place our value? Because if it's anywhere other than in him, it's going to give us problems. Now, as we draw this to a conclusion, I want to return to the passage. The parents were bringing their children to Jesus. Why were they doing that? It's because they loved their children and they wanted their children to be blessed. The disciples rebuked them. Why did they do that? Well, because the children were perceived as no more than a distraction or a nuisance. They couldn't contribute to Jesus's ministry. They had no influence. They had nothing to give. And none of this was untrue. Yet it also was not untrue that their parents loved them. A good parent loves their children unreservedly, not based on their accomplishments or values. I hope no parents keep a list of this, a score sheet on their fridge, where they're ticking day by day, where their children fit. A parent loves their children. And we have to realize that we are loved by the Father because we are his children. That is all. We're loved by him because we are his children. And this is what he's saying to his disciples and everybody that's listening here. You don't come to me based on how many of those 600 rules you have followed today. You don't come to me because you're powerful and influential. The only way to come to me is to become like a little child. And he invites each and every one of us today to remember who we are. Remember that we are children of God. We've been singing it just before this. I am a child of God. And he says, come to me and be blessed.